got to meet every mentor. So what I'm going to do now is we have all the mentors, which are all research scientists here at Green River Institute. And we're very, very lucky that they've donated their time and their expertise to teach you about some of the research that they do, some of the things that they're interested in, and that they work on. And this ties into some of the things that you've heard from the speakers. We have, I think, pretty much a whole range of topics covering all the topics. Some quantum gravity, loop quantum gravity, string theory, black holes, quantum information, and foundations of quantum theory. So that pretty much covers all the aspects that we have at Hoover Institute. So no matter what you're interested in, there'll be something for you. So what we'll do in a minute, I'll get all the researchers to come down and just introduce themselves and say a little bit about their topic, give you more of an idea. And that will be around about 2 minutes, so they'll be talking very quickly. And then what we'll do is everyone can get a scrap of paper and write down your top 3 choices. And so it's pretty informal, so if that's okay with the researchers, we'll just donate your choices by first name. So I think we all know each other well enough to talk on a first name basis. So mentors, students, mentors. Okay, everyone. Okay, so we'll need some silence for this, so everyone can hear and understand. And then what we'll do is, after that, we'll go out and sort through them all, and then we'll come back, write down all the groups, and then we'll go up to various areas. So without any further ado, maybe we'll just go down the list here. So, tell us.
Okay. You heard a little bit, apparently, about quantum memory yesterday. And so the idea is, you're all accustomed to taking your classical information and storing it in your hard drive. Well, in the future, we're also going to have things called quantum information, and we're going to want to store this in places, too. And so the question is, how can we store this information? And this is a very, very hard problem. It's very hard to store quantum information. So one of the ideas, look towards the classical way. You look at the classical cases and you see, oh look, there's a hard drive. And the hard drive sort of stays forever. And the reason is because it has little spins. There are lots and lots of spins, and every time a spin flips, it looks around at his neighbors and says, oh, I'm backwards. He's back. It's kind of a peer pressure system. The question is, how can we build a peer pressure system like that into quantum memory? And this is really what we're going to try to be looking at. And so basically with 2 days, we can on the first day look at classical memory, how does it work, why does it work, and then get some intuition from that and go on to quantum memory and say, well, what can we apply from what we learned from classical memory to the quantum memory? So the mathematics is going to be very simple. There's going to be a lot of hand waving, mostly probability and stuff like that, but hopefully it'll be fun.
My name is Rowan. I'm the second person who works over there. I want to talk to my group about black hole thermodynamics. So you probably all read stuff about black holes. They're very exciting and interesting things. Classically, black holes are things that particles can go into, but they can't come out of. But when you combine quantum mechanics, when you put quantum mechanics into this picture, you find out that particles can come out of black holes. So black holes have an entropy, and they satisfy thermodynamic laws. So we're going to look at those kinds of things. We're going to look at general relativity and try and understand what black holes are, and then look at how thermodynamics can be applied to black holes. So what's the black hole entropy? And that's it.
Okay, so I'm Sean, and I just want to draw attention. So I want to look at studying a little bit about black holes too, but not the same way that Rowan is. And if you have a black hole and you're falling into it, all right, you're sitting here like this, and your friend is watching you. Or statistically watching you. And it's really interesting because what happens, and it just turns out that way, maybe we're going to talk a little bit about it, is that you're maybe waving to your friend, and as you're waving, your hand is going slower and slower and slower, and then they see you cross this point right here called the horizon. Then you stop, you're frozen there. That's all they see. But the weird thing is that what you see is totally different. You see that you're just still waving to your friend, and eventually you cross the horizon and you don't feel any different, right? And then you keep going, and then eventually you hit the black hole, and then you're in screw. Probably you would actually probably you would make it all the way to the black hole, which is the corner part, right? That was anyways, but yeah, so the idea is that there's this horizon, and it's really weird. It looks like this weird thing from this person's perspective, but from this person, not so much. And we're going to see why. Because it turns out that this is a singularity, but it's a singularity that looks a lot like polar coordinates. And so we're going to start with polar coordinates. We're going to look at, these are called Schwarzschild black holes. And then hopefully, if we have time, we're going to talk about black holes and string theory. And these black holes come up in string theory in a really interesting setting where you have something called, I don't even know, I was not up yet here, but if you do, it would be really interesting, ADS-CFT. And to me, this is one a really exciting part of string theory. So hopefully, that's just, it's what I think maybe one of the more useful things, applications of string theory in the real world. So that might be.
Okay, my name is Imani, and I'm going to stop here. I'm from Memphis, and I'm not going to do anything fancy, but I'm going to do something concrete, and which, if you become an engineer of physics, use it for the rest of your life, is a very simple system called simple harmonic oscillator and quantization of this. And this is the part of thing that I'm going to teach you, but the spirit of my mentoring and then your mini project will be towards understanding the concept of duality. So duality is basically a concept and between two different theories. So what's the theory? So it'll give you a physical system, and then the theoretician gives you a language to And he gives you a language to ask questions, and then he gives you a method to calculate various quantities that you can ask about. So suppose there are two different traditions looking at the same system from two different universes. They may have two different languages. In that case, suppose a third person knows about these two theories but doesn't know about the physical system, then he wouldn't know that these two theories are the same. So for him to know that these two theories are describing the same system, he has to know a dictionary between these two theories. Any question that you can ask, there has to be a dictionary that says this question gets mapped to some other question in the other theory. And so once you know that dictionary, then you know that these two theories are the same, because any question here can be asked in a different language, and the answer will be the same and describes the physical system. So this is a very important concept, and it took a very long time. It was required to understand string theory in some detail, but I'm going to give you some very simple, system, and give you two different descriptions of that, and ask you to show, lead you towards that, to showing that they are the same, in fact. In the process, you will learn things about harmonic oscillators, quantized harmonic oscillators, what are bosons, fermions, what are multi-particle systems, and eventually show that two systems, which one is described in terms of bosons and another is described in terms of fermions, are the same, which is called by the fancy word, bosonization. Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so, John, my basic idea was to take you guys through the simpler elements of the mathematical language that is sometimes used in quantum gravity. Now, the idea is that as quantum gravity got more and more complicated, what happened is some people went and used more and more complicated math, but in the end, what was the more fruitful method was to use less and less complicated math. So I'm going to show you actually how you can use math that you're all used to, math that's pretty simple, like adding integers, things like this, to get more kind of physical knowledge of higher, more complicated systems like the ones that arise in quantum gravity. So I'm just going to kind of take you through some basic ways of expressing the same math you already know, looking at it in a different way, and using it to gain a better picture of physics. And hopefully through that, give you a better picture of how we actually use these theories of quantum gravity to understand reality, or try and understand reality.
I'm going to talk about the pi-razor. What is pi-razor? Well, pi-razor is an alternative to chroma cube. That's even better than chroma cube. Why is that? So you will see that there's still a problem with chroma cube. It's a small problem, but it's still a problem. This problem is called the measurement problem. It's also called the problem of Schrödinger's cat. And what is Schrödinger's cat? Well, as you might have seen, quantum theory allows for supposition of quantum states. In particular, you can have a supposition of a cat being alive plus being dead. So we have never seen that in nature, that the cat is something like dead and alive at the same time. So how do we explain that? One way to explain is by introducing hidden variables, by using hidden variable theories. And one of these hidden variable theories is pi-razor theory, which I'm going to work around. So one thing I should mention is that, for example, this measurement problem or this Schrödinger cat paradox isn't solved by string theory or by any other quantum theory, whether you make it supersymmetric or not. You still have this problem. So I'm going to deal with hidden variables and show how these hidden variables solve this problem. But in addition, so these hidden variables are better than quantum theory because they solve this problem. But they also bring about new features. One of these new features is non-locality. So these theories, in principle, allow for faster than light communication. So if you would, using these theories, you can in principle build a phone such that if you would like to call your relatives in the Andromeda galaxy, they would answer immediately, as if you would use phone for which the speed of communication is bounded by the speed of light. It would take you 5 million years to get an answer. So I'm going to work, in summary, I'm going to work about around this pi-razor theory and then variables in general, and just let you look for the new special features in these theories, like this non-locality.
Okay, what we'll do now is, if everyone could write down, so the mentors will be back in about 15 minutes, so everyone get out a piece of paper and write down the first names of the three people you would most like to add as your mentor, so just one, and then one name, number two, another name, number three, then another name, and then write your name, we need your full name. And also, what country you're from? Sorry? So bring your full name, plus what country you're from, or also what province you're from if you're from Canada.
And when is the first choice?
Yes, correct. So, it will look something like this.
Okay, so
Okay, something like that. Okay. Do you have to get the TV over? Can you take my
You got it done, pass it on the slide. You slip in the middle for one way and it'll go the other way. Make sure your name's on your selection. That's useless without it.
I'm going to go to the next one. For years, we've heard doom and gloom stories of the brain drain, our best and brightest off to the States, and our richest and most innovative fleeing to tax havens such as the Bahamas. Well, in Waterloo, one of Canada's billionaires is not only staying put, he's also helping to lure some of the best scientists in the world to Ontario.
Mike Lazaridis is the founder of the high-tech firm Research in Motion, the company that created the BlackBerry. He donated $100 million to create a new institute for the study of theoretical physics. Welcome to the Perimeter Institute, or as it's more affectionately known, PI.
The low level is very steady. That will be pretty steady. You look at the
thing. The part of it is by our own.
Play is important for in science. I mean, it's a creative process. It's not like people imagine that. Oh, one just has these complicated calculations, but one has to have ideas, one has to get inspired and all these things. And I think the Perimeter Institute tries to encourage this way of thinking and interacting.
This started from an act of philanthropy. This started from one individual saying, I want to do something interesting and innovative. I think that basic physics and fundamental research in general does not have as much attention and respect as it should in our society, and I think it should have more, and I would like to do something to influence that in a tangible manner.
What drives me to do this? It's the right thing to do. Contributing to your society is the right thing to do. Contributing to theoretical physics was my individual right thing to do. I just found myself in a position where I could contribute. I understood its value. I was able to contact the right people that could contribute. I was able to build a board. I was able to enlist the help of a lot of volunteers. And then I was able to find the right people to make sure it happened. Remember, I didn't do this. This was the work of my board. This was the work of Howard Burton and staff. This was the work of the initial physicists who had the courage to follow a madman and do something different.
We're given lots of latitude and freedom here to pursue our interests, and also a very comfortable, supportive environment is created that really encourages us to do the best we can. Some of the other institutes I've been at are very much, you feel kind of pigeonholed into a specific role and kind of following certain fixed patterns of research.
We wanted a place that was absolutely stunningly beautiful, but also stunningly useful. That had a tremendous amount of natural light that was coming through it, that it was built in terms of a combination of conviviality and natural interaction spaces for people to interact in their environment. There were places where they could play and relax, and there were places where they could have the privacy to be able to do the work that they actually need to work.
One of the great things about physics, and especially theoretical physics, is it's something that you can do without a tremendous amount of cost. I mean, if you think about CERN, the great particle accelerator project in Europe, made up of a multinational effort, billions of euros a year budget, that's not something Canada could really take on its own. On the other hand, theoretical physics, it requires a nice building, requires a nice setting, and requires blackboards and an office.
It's a funny thing, because when you bring people through the building, they're very curious, what's this blackboard thing? I mean, why at least don't you have whiteboards? Why don't you have fancy electronic whiteboards that scan and copy cams and print out things, and you can draw your block diagrams and your flowcharts and so forth? It's a tradition. It's a culture. And one of the shocking things about being here at Perimeter for somebody who doesn't understand this sort of work is that so much is done by pencil and paper. So much is done on blackboard. So much is done in conversation, in discussions. The mathematics is very sophisticated. And ironically, since it's very sophisticated, it doesn't often lend itself very well to computational analysis.
Pour générer l'équation différentielle.
To some extent, you have to invent your mathematics. You have to go back to basics. And the work that's being done here primarily consists of people trying to understand mathematically what's going on by doing analytical calculations. Part of it's the culture, and part of it's just the necessity of the work that they're doing.
It's a really good place for my subject in science. And it's an interesting place as well, because it's still something that is being developed. It's not something that has been there and running in the same way for a long time.
Twitter Institute was a very attractive place to come. It seems like an ideal setup with lots of smart people here, with the freedom to do research, basically work on what I want to. And yet had a connection to a nearby university, the University of Waterloo, and the program there of the Institute for Quantum Computing, which is very attractive, because they're also going to get very strong people in my field. Trying to recruit people who are at the top echelons to come to a new place is difficult. And the more success you have, the easier it is, because there's less of a risk. As I'd like to say, the good news as far as our development is that we are now competing for exactly the same people that Princeton and Harvard and Stanford and Caltech and Oxford and Cambridge and these places are competing for. And that, I think, is a significant accomplishment given the short time that we've been in operations.
The usual theory of gravity has 3 + 1 dimensions. That means 1 dimension for the time and 3 dimensions for space. And the main
the quantum system doesn't have to have a specific value of that property. Well, there are a few exceptions to that, but let's leave it at that.
It's not the ownership, but the nationality of your supervisor, which more influences your approach to your work.
I think the environment plays a big role in how we can go on doing our research.
In keeping with the belief that we want to do everything at the highest possible level, everything, not only recruit the highest possible researchers, provide the best possible environment for them, provide the best possible food in the bistro for them, recognize their importance, treat them with respect, give them every possible opportunity to be as successful as possible. That's the spirit in which this place was founded.
So with that, I give you David Walls again.
Thank you.
Wait to clap so you see whether this lecture is worth it. According to the many worlds theory, those worlds are real, just as real as the ones on the planet.
And how can then we assume that our beliefs are actually the real probabilities, and it's not some other one?
He says they can interact with each other, they can't interact with each other.
They can interact with each other, right? The branches.
They can, but then it goes like.
It is incredibly short-sighted of us to take education for granted. Teachers are incredibly important. Professors, researchers, they're incredibly important. We've got to change the culture. If there's anything we can change the culture so that we honor teachers, we honor researchers, because if they stop doing their job, we stop treading water.
First, the institute had just started for 2 or 3 years, but we could already hear about it. So it was supposed to be a great place for what I'm doing, quantum gravity. So that was the main, one of the main reasons why I came here. But also, I was in Marseille, and my family was living in Paris, so I like big cities. But I heard that the perimeter was very close to Toronto. So for me, I was not going to change much. So I was kind of a little surprised when I got here, and I saw Waterloo, which was but well, you get used to it. I mean, you have space. Everything.
So I heard a lot about the Perimeter Institute before, and so I came 1 year before it, and already then it was starting to be big and important in the field, and so there was many the reasons why I came was because the Perimeter Institute looked to be going to be a great institute for the field of quantum gravity.
Canada is quite an international place, and also I've lived in many places before, so I do not miss so much specific cultural things, and I'm quite used to living abroad. But I felt it was remarkably easy to get settled in Waterloo. I didn't really have any cultural shock.
I think the food is good in France, and I kind of miss that, the good cheeses, and bread, and so on. And then the life, of course, is very... It's very different in France than here, somehow. And so here it's nice. I mean, I enjoy very much the weather.
Also in Paris, or also in Marseille, I used to work a lot in cafes. So a different atmosphere. I'm not used to just sitting in my office and saying I have to work. So I usually work in cafes, sipping some coffee and so on and so on.
Waterloo, I think, is a good size. What was perhaps a bigger barrier was, well, first of all, the cold, because immediately previous year I was living in Berkeley, in California. And more generally,
moving to Canada, it just kind of conceptually was a big step for me. It's a different country. It's not radically different, but it is different. There is a psychological step to overcome there before moving.
For those of you who do not know, we typically pull these sorts of numbers to our public lectures even when there is a hockey season that's going on. So.
When we started thinking about outreach programs, I said, I'm going to start running public lectures in Waterloo. And I'd like to run them every month. And there was no shortage of people who said, Howard, you are out of your mind. There is no way you're going to run public lectures on science at a monthly frequency in a region, in a town the size of Waterloo, and expect to have anything more than 15 or 20 people there, and most of them may be certifiably insane.
Tonight we're going to talk about the Black Hole War, or Black Hole Wars. The Black Hole Wars were a 25-year intellectual battle of serious warning.
We've had to move three times. We're now in a local high school with a capacity of 550 people, and we're bursting at the seams. It's not just university professors who go to these audits. We don't fill it up with 550 university professors. There are plumbers, there are taxi drivers, there are accountants, sometimes there are even lawyers. Who knows?
Will they have the advantage of using the laws of quantum mechanics, which might need to pertain at very local level?
The Institute was founded on a set of principles which to some extent blows contrary to the prevailing political winds. That is, the notion that one has to produce things, one has to move forwards and have tangible results and tangible deliverables and measurables and so forth, and the so-called corporatization of the universities that many academics are railing against, and the lack of attention paid to fundamental inquiry and basic research, and research for its own sake, not only because it's intellectually stimulating and an enrichment of the human condition and all the rest of those things, which are very important, but also because historically the impact of basic research has been transformative.
So what got me into this position where I could fund something like this was the BlackBerry. Now, BlackBerry is a great invention. People love it. It's very successful. It's also based on the last 100 years of discovery. Radio waves, Maxwell's equations, Faraday, Marconi, quantum mechanics, solid-state physics, crystals that are in here. All that came from fundamental physics. This is reaping the harvest of about a century and a half of discovery, of ideas, basic ideas. Now, if I took this and I sent this back 200 years in time and I gave this to an industrialist of that time, it would probably have no effect in history. We would never even probably find it. Been destroyed somewhere, lost, who knows? Because they would have no idea what this is, because they don't have any of the fundamental knowledge to understand it. Okay? So we take this groundbreaking, internationally successful, award-winning product, send it back 200 years, and it would have no effect in history. Now, let's take this physics book on gravitation. Give this 200 years ago to a physicist of the time, and everything would change. Ideas are infinitely more powerful than things. Things are the byproduct of ideas. And the more we understand this, the more we realize that we need to fund ideas as much as we fund things.
Yeah.
Maybe this one will work. I don't know.
It will.
It's time.
This is amazing. We've got this great technology, so when everything goes wrong, I can hear it come from space. You can tell everything is
exactly. Not really. The car was going out this great light. The light was going out this big light. It's a steam light. It's a cosmic light.
Okay, we have some of the groups ready. So, turn the lights on. So as I said, we did our best to put everyone, give everyone their first preferences. That's just not possible. So all of the mentors are excellent. So John, so if everyone could just stay still, I'll read out a bunch of names, and then when I read the last one out, if you could follow John out. So Jarek Lamond, Aneta Stahl, Anita Stahl from Poland, Matthew Volpini, John Martin, excuse me for the bad pronunciation, but Salfio Langa, Frederick Head from Newfoundland, Rendani, Jessica Hopkins, and Candace. Right, if you could follow John out, take some pen and paper. And bring me up later. Okay, Sean, following Sean. Again, say some of the last names read out. Manuel and Graves. Stephen Wang. Ethan Wang, Marius, Marius. That's right, Marius. Josh Vanderham, Dennis, Nadine, Sam, and Oliver Kamakos. Oliver, where's Oliver? Yep,
where's Oliver again?
Right. Sorry?
Can you say the first one again?
First one was Manuel Andres. Is Manuel? Right. Great. Okay. Okay, follow Sean. Great, thank you, Sean. Okay, Rowan. Julia Losdale. Michael Jimenez. Laura Richards. Trinene. Ivan Mirandez. Benjamin Chang, Amy Willis, and Alan Snyder. Follow Rowan. Just added to the story. Thank you, Rowan. Okay, so. Thank you.